The Be Rad podcast is brought to you by MoFo, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Brad's macadamia masterpiece, mind-blowing nut butter blend, now offered on Amazon. Chili Technology, temperature-controlled mattress systems for a good night's sleep. InsideTracker.com, offering blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data all in one place. And Organifi, whole food organic superfood supplements and drink blends. And please visit the shopping page at bradkearns.com for my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance with great discounts for listeners. Here we go with the show.
We want to breathe through our nose only at all times, as minimally as possible for the rest of your life. That's your assignment. And yeah, if you need extra air, if you're doing an intense workout, yes, sure, go ahead, open your mouth, take some big deep breaths, and as soon as possible, regulate back to nose breathing. If you sit, even for 20 minutes, you stop burning fat efficiently, and you start to crater a little bit. You start to zone out, experience a decrease in cognitive function, and a decrease in fat metabolism. If you want to get optimal sleep, what this means is that you're going to require, or it'll be optimal to get more sleep in the winter and less in the summer.
Okay, how about this for a hot topic title? Lifestyle mistakes that stall fat loss and how to fix them. And I think the starting point for the discussion, going back to my great shows with Dr. Herman Ponser and his new book, Burn, and keeping this insight front in hand, that we burn the same amount of calories every day, regardless of whether we work out or not. So instead of pointing the arrow to, gee, I haven't been burning enough calories at the gym lately, so I've put on a few extra pounds, we instead look at our appetite and our consumption habits, realizing that our body composition is mainly a function of how much food we eat. And of course, the idea of optimizing this means that we have to kind of back into it with an assortment of healthy lifestyle practices, including regular exercise, including high intensity exercise, and all these things that have wonderful metabolic benefits. But when the smoke clears, it's this idea that our calorie burning is constrained, that's strongly supported by science. So we're going to go look at our appetite consumption habits, and that's going to be the centerpiece of how to correct these lifestyle mistakes and drop the excess body fat as you desire, keep your body composition at a healthy, optimal, ideal level long term. So I'm going to cover four different areas that cause us to overeat, gain excess body fat, or not succeed with fat reduction efforts, that dysregulate our appetite, cause us to eat too much. Okay, and they are stressful modern life, overly stressful exercise patterns, poor sleeping habits, and then maybe most important, our food choices. So let's start with stressful modern life, because when we're engaged in this hectic, high-stress daily pattern, we are going to chronically overstimulate the fight or flight response. Centerpiece to that is the overproduction, the chronic overproduction of the prominent stress hormone called cortisol. And one of the things that cortisol does is drive this process called gluconeogenesis. That's the conversion of amino acids, in this case, lean muscle mass, into glucose to provide quick energy. And so you're going to be on this crash and burn roller coaster ride where you are making a lot of sugar, and then you're kind of crashing and craving more sugar in the diet, and you're basically a sugar-fueled, carbohydrate-dependent, fast-moving, shallow, panting, breathing human beast that's constantly in fight-or-flight mode and running off of sugar. So these quick-burning fuel sources, the stop at Starbucks or the quick inhalation of an energy bar in between the high-carbohydrate meals, will get you through the hectic days, but it's going to lead to an increased appetite, especially for quick energy carbohydrates, and a propensity to store extra body fat rather than burn it. There are an assortment of inflammatory consequences here. The chronic overproduction of stress hormones, the chronic consumption of food, especially high carbohydrate foods, creating more oxidative stress in the body because sugar is a quick and dirty burning fuel source in comparison to burning stored body fat, for example. And when you have this these processes of oxidation and inflammation happening routinely as part of your lifestyle, these are the main drivers of disease throughout the body, especially heart disease. The formation of plaque in the arterial wall is a consequence of oxidation and inflammation of the cholesterol molecule. So the hectic high-stress modern life is responsible in general for fight or flight patterns, consuming sugar, crashing out, having an appetite for more sugar or processed carbohydrates. It might be bread in your case or potato chips or whatever. When I say sugar, we know that almost all carbohydrate, when you consume it, is very quickly converted into glucose to be burned in the bloodstream. And then the excess that you don't burn off right away can easily be converted into triglyceride fat and stored as fat. So we want to get off this carbohydrate dependency lifestyle pattern and transition over to becoming a fat-adapted creature, and that is strongly associated with lower stress lifestyle patterns, where you're breathing comfortably through your nose, stimulating parasympathetic activity rather than fight or flight sympathetic activity, where you're doing this gluconeogenesis, converting amino acids into glucose and burning through this glucose quickly and then having a craving for more sugar. So if you're experiencing energy level swings throughout the day, let's point not only to your food choices, but also to your ability to manage and regulate stress and slow things down a little bit. Breathing's a big part of this. Listen to my recent breather show, the breather show about breathing, where I talk about the Oxygen Advantage, the book from Patrick McKeown, where he's asking you, quick takeaway, if you don't have time to listen to the show, his centerpiece assertion is that we want to breathe through our nose only at all times, as minimally as possible for the rest of your life. That's your assignment. And yeah, if you need extra air, if you're doing an intense workout and you absolutely positively have to pull in more air to finish your running interval or your bicycling interval, yes, sure, go ahead, open your mouth, take some big deep breaths, and as soon as possible, regulate back to nose breathing. And this is the low stress, maximum efficiency way to breathe. And it has a lot of contribution to your fat metabolism, your appetite, and your ability to regulate stress. So yeah, I think that should be sufficient to entice you to go listen to more information about breathing. But I love that takeaway. I like simple takeaways that I can remember. Breathe through your nose at all times for the rest of your life as minimally as possible. Remember how when you're stressed and someone says, okay, calm down, take a deep breath, take a few deep breaths. When you take deep breaths, you are actually stimulating the stress response. So when someone wants to help out and you're feeling stressed or you want to help someone, say, take a shallow breath through your nose, take a very minimal breath through your nose. Okay, breathe even less. And that's how you truly calm down. And the other thing that happens when you breathe minimally rather than when you're sucking in excess oxygen through these big mouth breaths that we're inclined to take if we're not paying attention, when you breathe minimally, you improve your carbon dioxide tolerance in the body. And when you have improved carbon dioxide tolerance, when you can handle a buildup of greater levels of carbon dioxide, guess what happens? You dump off more oxygen to the working tissues and muscles that need it. So by breathing minimally, you give your body more oxygen, especially important for athletic performance. So since I've been exposed to this information, I have made a point to try to breathe through my nose during workouts as much as possible until I absolutely desperately need to open my mouth, suck down a few breaths, and then as fast as possible return to nose breathing only. I'm liking those Breathe Right nasal strips because a lot of times my nose is a little bit stuffed and it's hard to get all the air through there. You have to be careful with opening up those passageways. You can overdo it, as Brian McKenzie said on our recent interview. But for me, I kind of work on those when I'm doing a sprint workout or when I'm knowing I'm going to be trying to pull a lot of air through my nose. And what happens when I do my drills, which are really intense and challenging, they take about 15, 20 seconds, a jump sequence or a drill sequence of running drills, I can breathe through my nose during the drill. And then when it's done, I kind of have that catch-up moment where I really need to breathe. And so I open my mouth, I take 2, 3, or 4 deep breaths, whatever I need. And then I immediately try to regulate back to nose breathing only. And I'm taking big, aggressive, deep nose breaths through my using full exchange of oxygen with my diaphragm. That's what's great about nose breathing is that you're forced to engage the lower lobes of the lungs by using the diaphragm muscle appropriately. That is inflating the abdomen first. And that's showing that your diaphragm is allowed to inflate and have a maximum efficiency breath. So not only am I breathing minimally and improving my carbon dioxide tolerance, but I'm using the lungs to maximum efficiency instead of taking those shallow panting breaths through my mouth, as most athletes are inclined to do when they're not paying attention during workouts. So that's a plug for breathing to kind of help minimize your stress levels and minimize the activation of the fight or flight, the sympathetic nervous system, and kind to be more chill. So slowing things down, breathing through your nose, taking an extra beat rather than rushing around to everything. And that has a direct effect on your ability to be a good fat burner and to regulate mood, energy, appetite, cognitive function throughout the day rather than being harried and stressed. Okay. So also in this category of stressful modern life, messing up your fat burning goals, is the prolonged periods of stillness that are so common with most of our daily patterns, especially if we're working in an office environment, a computer environment, and we're sitting for long periods of time. It's good scientific research suggesting that sitting for as little as 20 minutes causes a significant decrease in glucose tolerance and an increase in insulin resistance. In other words, if you sit even for 20 minutes, you stop burning fat efficiently and you start to crater a little bit. You start to zone out, experience a decrease in cognitive function and a decrease in fat metabolism. What happens when you stop burning fat efficiently? Yep, you start to get a little appetite for a little snack and you have to get up from your desk and walk down the hall and go have some hit of sugar drink or snack and then go back to work and, you know, burn off that sugar in a short time and go through this energy roller coaster that is not only contributed by your food choices, but also your sitting choices. Also, it's known that the brain cannot truly function, the brain cannot truly focus on a peak cognitive task for more than around 20 minutes at a time before it needs a break. That's why the important work done by air traffic controllers and car dealers in the casinos, they have these crazy work schedules where they have frequent breaks for prolonged periods of time and then back on where they're on with 100% focus throughout the dealing. I believe the car dealers go on a 40-20 pattern for their 8-hour shift. So they're dealing for 40, they're taking a 20-minute break and back to dealing for 40. The air traffic controllers have something similar where there's nice chunks where they're always going off and taking a break so they don't have to continue on for an inordinate amount of time because it's known that the brain will zone out if you try to go and go and go. And boy, I mean, we have to recalibrate our notions here because a lot of people think that, hey, 3 hours, that's a normal amount of time to be sitting and focusing at my desk and then I'll go out to lunch and I'll have a nice break. No, it's 20 minutes. And if you don't give yourself a break, guess what? A break will be taken for you in some way, shape, or form. And I can attest to that. If I'm going strong and grinding away for a long period of time, guess what? Pretty soon the YouTube windows start to open and I'm studying high jump videos instead of continuing on finishing a chapter in my book. It just seems to happen that way unless I get up and take a movement break. And I say movement break because then you're getting the maximum benefits when you get out of the chair, walk around, perhaps do a micro workout. And I'm so fond of those because they get the blood flowing, the oxygen circulating throughout the body, and they're building up your fitness benefit. And they're certainly contributing to your movement objectives for the day and giving you a nice break from sitting and cognitive function. So every 20 minutes, get up and do some form of movement. Maybe it's sprinting up one flight of stairs or doing one set of push-ups or whatever it is that you want to do. Maybe some stretches, and then get back to work if you absolutely must after a 1 to 2 minute break. And that's a fantastic way to go through the day more productive, more focused, and again, trying to stick to the theme of the story here, also helping you improve your fat burning capabilities so that, again, backing into this goal of dropping excess body fat successfully, so that your appetite is regulated. And instead of walking down the hall to get a snack after an hour and a half straight at your screen, you're walking down the hall every 20 minutes and doing some skips on the way back to get a little workout. That's your choice right there. Really interesting. Okay, so in the stressful modern life category, we have this harried, hectic pace that leads to sugar cravings. And we have the prolonged sitting that also leads to sugar cravings and overeating. So let's transition to the next of the four categories that I'm going to cover in this show. And that is, oh my gosh, the big one for fitness people, overly stressful exercise patterns. And what's really distressing to me is that the predominant fitness programming out there is promoting this overly stressful approach to exercise. And what I see mostly is the endurance scene, right? People who are fixated on cardio as their main form of exercise, and the main amount of time devoted to exercise is this steady state cardiovascular exercise. And of course, I'm talking about the endurance community where people are participating in the running events, triathlon, multi-sport, adventure racing, the people that are out there training and putting in hours and miles on the road. And then also, it seems to be the predominant form of exercise inside the gyms. When you walk in the gym, the vast majority of the square footage is devoted to these banks and rows of cardio machines, where people are heading in there, they're turning on the TV or the TV's on the wall, and they're climbing the stairs for 45 minutes and calling it a day and going home. And that's better than sitting around, of course. But when you're kind of overemphasizing this steady state cardiovascular activity, by and large, most people are performing these workouts at a slightly too elevated of a heart rate. So they're transitioning outside of the predominantly aerobic exercise zone and into this no man's land, this black hole, they call it, where you're burning a little bit more glucose and a little bit less fat than you potentially could if you slowed down a little bit, thereby making the workout a little extra stressful and somewhat depleting and exhausting, maybe mildly depleting and exhausting, not to the point where you're some extreme exercise endurance freak that's doing track workouts and collapsing on the side of the track. But no, if you're climbing the stairs for 45 minutes or pedaling the bicycle or doing a Peloton workout, this steady state cardio that is slightly too difficult and slightly too stressful will lead you right back in the direction of, guess what? Yes, carbohydrate cravings, overeating as a natural and programmed response to a depleting exercise session. And so you think you're doing yourself a solid by jogging your 5 miles a few days a week or getting on that stationary bicycle and performing a class a couple days a week. But when it's slightly too difficult, or you do it for too long a period of time, there's all kinds of ways to get into the burnout phase rather than the truly nourishing and energizing phase. And most people are making that mistake with their steady state cardio. And then on the other side of the coin, we have the ultra popular HIIT type of workout programming, high intensity interval training. And that's what the vast majority of group exercise and classroom programming is featuring, where you're going in there and instead of just going along at a steady, boring state, because you don't really need an instructor to take you through a 45-minute pedal at a heart rate of 140, right? You can do that yourself while you're watching TV. So when you're in this classroom group exercise setting and the high intensity interval training modality entails performing some work efforts, resting, performing more work efforts, resting, performing more work efforts, and resting. And by and large, what's happening is these workouts last too long and they're asking for too many work efforts that are slightly to significantly too difficult with not enough rest periods in between them. So you're not really honoring the acronym high intensity interval training, because pretty soon, because of the cumulative fatigue happening when you're doing 10 times 30 seconds hard and 30 seconds rest or whatever the workout is, what's happening is you're no longer producing a high level output because you're getting tired. So you're kind of just dragging through the workout, trying to hang on, trying to do what the instructor says in the name of fitness. And you're ending up to have, again, a depleting and exhausting workout. And I'm going to contend very strongly that most fitness programming is driving you right into this hole of burnout and the ensuing sugar cravings, overeating, and increased laziness for the rest of the day because the workout was too stressful. So as we've talked about a lot on the show, a properly formulated high-intensity exercise session is very short in duration and extremely explosive and high quality in nature, so that each work interval that you perform is of similar quality. It doesn't last that long because you're going for maximum output. You're trying to push the body to the maximum to achieve this fitness benefit from stressing the body and having it come back and adapt stronger. But you're quitting, you're walking away long before the cumulative fatigue kicks in and you start performing worse on your ensuing reps. So if you're doing something 15 times in a certain class or going over and over for workouts that last, you know, 25, 35, 45 minutes, an hour of high intensity interval training, you're way past the point of maximum benefit and into diminishing returns and consequent increase in appetite, especially for quick energy carbohydrates, and this propensity for the rest of the day to be less active, lazier, and by all manner engaging in compensatory behavior, compensating for that overly stressful event that was the workout. So instead of a HIIT session that lasts 45 minutes, it's far superior to go and contemplate a workout where you're being truly explosive. Dr. Craig Marker calls it high intensity repeat training, as opposed to high intensity interval training, where you're doing some very, very short sprints. I've talked about the sweet spot lasting between 10 and 20 seconds and taking long rest periods in between these brief explosive efforts so that you are fully recovered and re-energized to go and perform another one and another one. And once we get up to somewhere around 10 efforts, so somewhere between 4 and 10 efforts lasting only 10 to 20 seconds and with a 6-to-1 rest to work ratio. So my favorite example, going out to the running track, I like to do 6 to 8 times 80 meter all out sprints. Those are going to take me somewhere around 10 seconds, and I'm going to rest at least 1 minute in between these sprints, which is a long time when you're only sprinting for 10 seconds. So it's certainly not this no pain, no gain type of suffer fest that we're so accustomed to performing when we have the peppy instructor at the front of the room telling us to once again, sprint, here we go, one more time. Okay, I think you can do one more after that. I tricked you, ha ha, here comes another one. Oh gosh, that workout was so brutal. I'm dripping with sweat after. I feel great. I'm full of stress hormones and endorphins. But guess what? 12 hours later, you're going to be the person reaching for the Ben and Jerry's ice cream because of that depleting, excessively stressful workout in the morning. So most of fitness seems to be steady state cardio that's slightly too elevated of a heart rate. So it's kind of difficult, not super hard, like an interval workout, like a high intensity interval training session, but just a little bit too difficult for your own good. Or it seems to be this high intensity interval training protocol where they're taking you through the Peloton workout or the boot camp class, and they're asking you to do too much with insufficient rest between the efforts, and it turns into exhausting, depleting. So the greatest fitness benefits come when you challenge your body with brief, explosive, maximum all-out efforts. Dr. Doug McGuff's great book, Body by Science, references a lot of research showing that unless you challenge your muscles with maximum output, you don't get the maximum organ reserve benefits, which promotes longevity and delaying and aging gracefully. So organ reserve is a term that refers to the functional capacity of your organs to work beyond their baseline capabilities in order to save your life. Let's say if you're involved in a trauma, like an accident, you needed surgery, and your lungs are being put to the test, your heart, all that kind of thing. But also just the ability of your organs to stay strong throughout your lifetime. Your organ reserve is directly correlated with your functional muscle mass. So if you maintain muscle mass throughout your life, you're going to have good organ function correspondingly. Obviously, because you're trying to get big biceps, you need to ask your heart and lungs and other organs to kick into gear when you're doing a workout. So when you the takeaway point here from Dr. Doug McGuff's book, other guys are talking about this too, like Ted Naiman, co-author of the PE Ratio Diet with William Shufelt. They're talking about challenging your muscles to failure, right? To doing something so difficult that you're done. So you get up on the pull-up bar, you can only do five, you try to do the sixth one. You're trying as hard as you can, and then you drop to the ground. When you challenge your muscles to failure, that's when all these amazing health, hormonal, metabolic benefits kick in. So once in a while, you don't have to do this every single day, of course, but we want to have these workouts where you're doing these brief, all-out, explosive, maximum efforts that don't last for very long, have a lot of rest between them, and the workout doesn't last very long in general. And that's vastly superior to this trudging along, trying to put in a certain number of minutes or hours in the name of health and fitness. These are the workouts that are going to be exhausting, depleting, and causing all these compensations to kick in. Okay, I know I belabored that point and hit you hard because I'm so passionate about encouraging, inspiring people to alter their exercise routines to be something besides just straightforward marching in one direction at one heart rate. This is simply not going to give you the same fitness benefits as engaging in the brief, explosive, high-intensity stuff and backing off from the exhausting, depleting workouts. Please go to marksdailyapple.com and look at my two-part article titled, I think we called it Don't Jog, It's Too Dangerous, or Jogging 2.0. You can see my video on YouTube, Jogging 2.0, and we'll put the links to the article and the videos in the show notes. That was a quote. The quote, "Don't jog, it's too dangerous," came from Art Devaney, one of the four fathers of the paleo movement. And it was a witty little quote, but he was serious, saying that the heart does not like to be pegged at a high level for minutes and hours at a time, day after day after day. It's not healthy for cardiovascular function. There's all kinds of research. It's called the extreme endurance exercise hypothesis, showing that health problems can ensue for people that are extreme devotion to long-term, years and years of endurance training, where they're pegging that heart rate up high or up in the medium zones and going for hours and hours. And then you start to get this atrial fibrillation and other conditions associated with overuse of the heart muscle. Just like if you do too many bicep curls, you're going to overuse your bicep curl and it's going to be scarred and sore and inflamed. Same thing happens to the poor heart, people. So the way around this is to move frequently at a very slow pace, right? So you're just comfortably walking and moving around. You're not overly stressing the heart, but you're giving it some activity rather than sitting. And then combined with that, these brief explosive efforts. And gee, where does this sound familiar? Oh, yeah. That's what Mark Sisson and Original Primal Blueprint have been talking about since 2008. Remember, the three Primal Blueprint fitness laws are move frequently at a slow pace, lift heavy things, and sprint once in a while. So we're talking about this this kind of polarity between a ton of low-level movement as a lifestyle and then going in and hitting it hard once in a while and doing things that really put your body under resistance load or maximum all-out sprinting effort. And that is your key to fitness. Let's move on to sleep. Yeah, if you mess up your sleep, good luck dropping excess body fat and keeping it off. Sleep is so important for fat metabolism, appetite regulation, hormone balance. And remember, hormone optimization should be considered the key to dropping excess body fat successfully and keeping it off. Because when your appetite's regulated, when your energy level's steady, that's when you feel fine. You're not depriving yourself. You're not on some stupid, crazy crash diet. And everything just flows along nicely. You eat just the amount of food you need to feel alert and energized. And boy, it's not that hard. But if you compromise your sleep, that's when you experience this drift back toward carbohydrate dependency. That's sugar cravings, propensity for fat storage hormonally, and dysregulated appetites. You're going to eat more food than you need every single day because you have created sleep deficiency. Listen to my show with Jeff Kahn. It was great. He had this very simplified insight that we want to track our sleep debt and try to keep sleep debt at zero. So if we know that we feel best on 8 hours a night sleeping, like most humans, and we kind of tend to compromise that once in a while, let's say on that busy, crazy, wild weekend, you only slept 6.5 hours on Friday night, and then on Saturday night, you only slept 7. So guess what? You just created 1.5 hours of sleep debt plus another hour of sleep debt. So now you're looking at 2.5 hours of sleep debt. And if there's some way to make that up in the future through napping, so let's see, if you napped for 5 days in a row, you'd be back at zero with your sleep debt. That's great. Or maybe getting an extra hour of sleep here and there, and you want to kind of get back to zero as that ultimate goal of optimizing sleep. We're not doing very well. Research cited in The Obesity Code, the book by Dr. Jason Fung, reveals that Americans slept for an average of 9 hours per night in 1910. Average of 9 hours per night. Can you even imagine that today? That's fantastic information. Wow. I mean, they had nothing else to do, right? They probably, the candles were burning out at a certain time of the evening. There was no more light. Blow out the candle, go to sleep. What else are you going to do? That changed by 1960. So then we had televisions coming into play, whatever other things that were getting us going and preventing us from having that truly nourishing and optimal nights of sleep back in 1910. So by 1960, the average was between 8 and 9 hours per night. And then by 1995, it went down to 7 hours per night as the American average. Today, 2021, 30% of adults sleep for fewer than 6 hours per night, with all kinds of downstream health, hormonal, metabolic problems ensuing from this pinching of sleep. And we're going to mostly blame excess artificial light and digital stimulation after dark for this compromising of sleep habits. So when we engage with screens after it gets dark, we suppress this important hormonal circadian process called dim light melatonin onset, DLMO. And what that is a extremely powerful, genetically hardwired inclination to wind down and eventually get sleepy in the hours after the sun sets in our environment. And this has been a circadian function for millions of years. All living things on Earth adhere to a very powerful circadian rhythm. So we're all influenced by light and dark cycles. Maybe you can reference a time time when you went on a camping trip. So you didn't have a ton of artificial light. You just had the campfire. And sure enough, you got sleepy a few hours after the sun set. And you went back into your tent, went to sleep. And when the sun came up in the morning, yep, it woke you up right around sunrise, because that's how humans are wired to awaken when sunlight hits not just our eyes, but all the skin cells in our body have receptors to sunlight. So that's how you can kind of still wake up around sunrise, even if you have blackout curtains and a blindfold on. It's because the tiny bits of light streaming through the blackout curtains are hitting your skin cells, and your body somehow is really highly calibrated to wake up upon sunrise. If you're going to bed really super late and you need more sleep, you can do the best you can to kind of sleep through those early morning hours. But the ideal here is to have mellow evenings with minimal artificial light and digital stimulation, so that you can allow dim light melatonin onset to ensue and get you sleepy and get to bed soon after it gets dark. So reflecting on that statement carefully, you'll realize that your sleep habits might vary quite a bit between summer and winter, especially if you live further from the equator and you have a disparity in the type of day in Seattle. In the summer, it gets dark at 9:45 at night and gets light at 4 something in the morning. And in the winter, it gets dark at 4 p.m. And so you have a great disparity in your daily patterns. Because if you want to get optimal sleep, what this means is that you're going to require, or it'll be optimal to get more sleep in the winter and less in the summer. Yes, our bodies can totally handle this. One of my favorite books on the subject is called Lights Out, Sleep, Sugar, and Survival by Formsby and Wiley. And it's a great book, and it talks about how the optimal sleep in the summertime might be around 8 hours, but in the wintertime, it might be around 9.5 hours for most people. So we're designed to slow things down in the winter, to exercise and move less, sleep more. And this is on account of less sunlight, less daylight hours, less activity, not necessarily needing to hibernate like a bear, but definitely slowing things down in the winter. And that even means probably backing off your extreme fitness regimen and just having a more low-key, chill winter. Also aligned here as an aside almost is the minimal intake of carbohydrates in the winter. Again, adhering to our evolutionary example, Dr. David Perlmutter says that you should not eat any fruit in the wintertime, because it's against our ancestral experience where fruit did not exist. It didn't ripen in the wintertime. So winters are dark, cool, more sleep, less carbohydrate, and this is all going to calibrate to optimize your appetite, your energy levels, and your body composition. Certainly, we are genetically inclined to increase body fat in the winter months, but that's because we are going through these dark, cold winters, which no longer exist. So right now, since we don't have these dark, cold winters, we probably don't need to pack on any extra pounds to stay warm anymore, right? We can just turn the thermostat up. So there goes that excuse. You could probably expect or aspire to maintain a pretty healthy body composition year round, maybe with a little bit of fluctuation as you desire. But with this show talking about the mistakes that we're making and how we can turn them around, just try to optimize your sleep year round, especially in the wintertime. Guess what happens if you have a single bad night of sleep? You spike cortisol by 100%. This is cited by Dr. Fung in his book. And when cortisol is high, this leads to sugar cravings, fat storage, and dysregulated appetite. High stress lifestyle leads to sugar cravings, fat storage, and dysregulated appetite. We can get there in many different ways. We can overproduce cortisol because our training program is too stressful, like I just described in the previous section, or when we're screwing up our sleep habits. Research showing that 2 weeks of sleeping only 4 hours a night, 2 weeks, results in you officially becoming insulin resistant. Oh my gosh. And I think it was these poor college students. I think they were from Northwestern, if I'm not mistaken. But these poor guys volunteered to go 4 hours a night and get woken up, apparently. So they'd only sleep 4 hours a night for 2 weeks. That's a pretty brutal experiment. I hope they paid them well. But at the end of 2 weeks, they all developed insulin resistance. That's on the road to type 2 diabetes and dysfunction and disease. Of course, they're going to finish the experiment and go back to their normal ways and hopefully, assumingly, regain your health. But boy, that's a pretty eye-opening stat to think that in just 2 weeks of sleep deprivation, you're in the insulin-resistant category. That's brutal. There's all kinds of longitudinal studies on large population groups showing that sleep deprivation leads to insulin resistance, obesity, elevated disease risk in all forms. And any time you are not well rested, even temporarily, like that one bad night of sleep, spiking cortisol 100%. So any time you're creating sleep debt, as I mentioned before, you are drifting into carbohydrate dependency rather than healthy fat burning. So I covered stressful modern lifestyle circumstances, especially too much sitting, overly stressful exercise patterns, especially the steady state cardio at too elevated of a heart rate and high intensity interval training workouts. And then I covered sleep. And now last but not least, and maybe this is the most important, is our food choices. Two great recent books. One of them is called The Hungry Brain, by Stefan Gagné, and one of them's called Wired to Eat by my former podcast guest, the one and only Rob Wolf. Another great book I should mention is The PE Diet, written by former podcast guests, both of them, Dr. Ted Naiman and William Shufeldt. And the premise here is that the highly palatable or the hyper palatable modern foods are really possibly most to blame for the obesity epidemic, the frustration, the inability to reduce excess body fat, is that we have these foods laying around, lingering in our diet, and generally it's the combination of fat, sugar, and salt. So think about all the decadent, indulgent foods that we eat, or even our favorite meals. So if you talk about combining fat, sugar, and salt, we're talking about a plate of pasta with meatballs and marinara sauce. We're talking about cheesecake. We're talking about ice cream. We're talking about potato chips. Combining fat and sugar together is a combination that's virtually unknown in nature. There's no natural food from the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom that does this. And it's known that we combine these two intense savory and sweet together, it hijacks the appetite center in our brain. It stimulates the same opioid receptors that the hard drugs do. And this leads us to want more and more and more. So when you're looking at that pint of ice cream and you want to have one bite, it's very difficult to restrain yourself because of the intense flavor sensations that the combination of fat and sugar bring to your very highly refined dopamine receptors in the brain. So I think the main takeaway here, if you read through these books and realize what they're doing to our brains, is get this stuff out of the house, get it out of your sight, and resist that temptation by choosing out of it, or just making some rules and guidelines here saying, I'm not going to consume these foods at all, because I know that they're a slippery slope downhill when you allow them back into your diet. Go back and listen to the show titled The Fatty Popcorn Boy Saga, where I talk about my increasing fascination, devotion to an evening bowl of popcorn that got out of hand, because at one point it was a celebratory experience. Hey, we're having a gathering. We're going to watch a good show. We're going to pop up some popcorn. I happen to make a really mean bowl of popcorn where I drizzle olive oil as well as melted butter in there and a lot of salt, and it tastes delicious. But then it went from celebratory event to evening habit, and that unregulated, incredible flavor intensity led me to unregulated consumption. So I'd eat a lot of popcorn rather than a little. And so it's something to think about, that these hyper palatable foods are a very difficult thing to resist. Here's an insight that Dr. Ted Naiman shared from his book, The PE Ratio Diet, and also on our podcast. This protein to energy ratio of food is what he argues is the key to losing excess body fat, maintaining healthy body composition. The protein to energy ratio in your diet, or the protein to calories, right, total energy ratio, wants to be optimal because our basic survival need is to consume sufficient protein. So that's our strongest cravings and our highest natural calibration, is we're going to, one way or the other, consume sufficient protein in order to survive, in order to support muscle growth and maintenance and all kinds of bodily function maintenance levels, immune function, all that kind of stuff. Organ function is predicated on getting sufficient protein. If we don't get enough protein, we're going to shrivel up and die, literally, right? So we have super strong cravings and calibrations to consume sufficient protein. So if we have to extract our protein from a massive amount of calories because we're consuming a lot of these hyperpalatable foods that combine sugar and fat, we're going to eat more and more and more. And Dr. Naiman argues that deep down, all we're trying to do is extract our protein needs from our dietary choices. And so if you think of a bag of potato chips, Naiman mentioned this as an example on the show, a bag of potato chips is like 5% of the calories are protein, right? It's mostly carbohydrates and fat. And so you're going to finish the whole bag in a futile attempt to get your protein needs met. Now, if you prioritize protein in the diet, which by and large, almost all experts are going to recommend this because protein is the most important. So you want to get your protein needs met first. Hey, even if you're a vegan, the vegans are definitely going for the bean and rice combinations to get their protein. So if you can get your protein needs met with a minimal amount of total energy, if you can keep that ratio low, you are going to feel great. You're going to be highly satiated because protein is the most satiating of all macronutrients, even more satiating than fat. And you're going to easily or efficiently, effectively drop excess body fat and be able to keep it off by prioritizing high quality dietary proteins. That would be pretty obvious if we can reflect on some of our satiating, satisfying meals. If you order an omelet for breakfast, you're going to feel great for hours afterward because you got a lot of protein and you also got a lot of natural nutritious fats, and overall nutrient density of something like an omelet or a steak or a plate of eggs. It's hard to overeat and go down this hyperpalatable food route when you're talking about steak or eggs, right? You have maybe one steak, maybe two if you're super hungry, but you're not going to want three. You're going to be fine. You're going to be stuffed. Unlike when we're looking at the hot fudge sundae options and the bowls of popcorn. So keeping this protein to energy ratio optimal is a great tip to escape from, I suppose, the opposite would be a diet featuring a lot of hyperpalatable foods that combine sugar and fat and cause you to eat more and more and more and still don't address your truly deep and hardwired nutritional needs and cravings. So you can't live on just protein, right? So you're going to want to have some natural nutritious fats in the diet. And many people are going to want to have some level of carbohydrate intake for assorted reasons. One of them being enjoying life. One of them being performance and recovery. So interestingly, Dr. Naiman and Ben Greenfield both talk about this, this idea of perhaps eating all your carbohydrates at once, at the same time. And this will allow you to bank a lot of hours in this low insulin fasted-like state where you're prioritizing the burning of stored body fat. And then if you do enjoy carbohydrates and you feel like they're good for your thyroid, adrenal, athletic function, go ahead and enjoy those in the evening. Ben Greenfield talks about this where he has evening family time where they make wonderful concoctions in the kitchen. They enjoy family bonding experience. And he's consuming, in many cases, a lot of carbohydrates. But this ensures that he recovers from his badass workouts that he performs during the day. day while also benefiting from hours and hours in fasted-like state, making ketones, right? He's doing a fasted workout earlier that day in the morning, but at the nighttime, he lets it all hang out, enjoys those carbohydrates, and gets the best of both worlds in that sense. And Dr. Naaman said too, he said, focus your carbohydrate intake so that you can bank a lot of hours in the prioritized fat-burning state, but you don't necessarily have to swear off carbohydrates overall in general, like a lot of ketogenic messages saying, hey, keep your carbs at 50 grams a day forevermore. And now that's being criticized as unnecessary and possibly having some detrimental effects, including metabolic insulin resistance. That's the idea that if you're producing insulin so minimally all the time because you're an extremely strict ketogenic person, your body may be desensitized to the effects of insulin signaling, and it might be helpful once in a while to do what they call a carb refeed. So go ahead and enjoy some sweet potatoes or a big meal that's emphasizing carbohydrates once in a while. And in Ben's case, I believe since he's pretty active exerciser, he's probably getting a dose of carbs every day or most every day in the evening. So interesting to think about. But the main takeaway here in category 4 is your food choices and staying away from those hyper palatable foods that will hijack the appetite center in your brain and throw off all your best efforts, all the hard work you're putting in to try to drop excess body fat. And you think about it over time when you've had these periods of time of unregulated eating. We can trace those to the dopamine receptors and the incredible flavor sensations of the good stuff out there. There's also an assortment of environmental triggers. One of them is just a plate stuck in your face, right? Hey, the waiter comes by and says, can I tempt you with our dessert tray? And you're full, you're stuffed, you just had a fantastic meal, but they stick the dessert tray in your face and you're like, well, maybe I'll have a small... just a tiny little slice of that creme brulee. Okay, yeah, I'll try it. So environmental influence triggers are huge. Same with, the cultural significance of heading out for a trip to the ice cream store. So when we go to Seattle every year and they have these wonderful handmade ice cream shops, oh my gosh, it's delicious. It's all part of the experience of going on vacation and visiting the great town of Seattle. And so we want to put in a plug for celebrating and enjoying life and making these rituals an acceptable part of a wonderful life. But that's a whole different deal than restocking on your grocery list to make sure you always have pints of ice cream in your freezer. That's a huge difference from enjoying vacation and going out on a destination. And by the way, we're walking to these places and sometimes it's a mile away. So we're pretty much enjoying the ice cream and then walking it off after to some extent, minimizing the insulin response. So we have the profound dopamine stimulating effects of hyperpalatable foods. We have the environmental triggers like a plate stuck in your face or being on vacation and having it be part of the cultural experience. And then another thing on the list here would be times when you're tired, fatigued, undisciplined, your willpower has been diminished over the course of the day when you had to make all kinds of choices, decisions, and limitations. And at the same time, craving a little extra energy because you're so tired. Maybe this might be when you're plopped in front of the television at 9:30 p.m. And if you didn't have artificial light and digital stimulation happening, you might be retiring to bed and blowing out the candle like your grandfather or great-grandfather did in 1910. But instead, you need a little energy boost, and that's when you go for the popcorn machine. So especially late in the evening, what you're doing when you have a little treat is you're spiking your energy for a temporary period. You're going to promote the production of cortisol, the stress hormone, and you're going to suppress melatonin. So you're not going to get sleepy. You're going to enjoy another episode in your binge watching experience thanks to the dose of the hyper palatable food. But of course, that's going to unwind and compromise your fat reduction goals. So at that juncture, best choice is to go to sleep, right? And the second best choice is to, you know, ride it out and have yourself a wonderful glass of kombucha or something and realize that, yeah, I'm maybe feeling a little hungry, could use a little energy boost, but it's mostly because of my long, stressful, exhausting day and the late hour. So we'll just try to manage these occasions where we tend to turn to the hyperpalatable foods. And then finally on this list, along with the others, the environmental triggers, the dopamine stimulating, and the times when you're tired, undisciplined, craving quick energy, especially at night, we have the category of emotional dysregulation. So if you're bored, if you're looking for instant gratification as a stress outlet, if you're feeling dysregulated, experiencing emotional pain or disturbance, a lot of times we reach for food because, again, it gives us that dopamine hit, takes us away from our problems for a brief moment, we enjoy it, and then we go back to real life. So just paying attention and noticing how emotional dysregulation can lead to cravings, especially for quick energy carbohydrate, and trying our best to kind of recalibrate and get away from the emotional dysregulation, the cause in the first place. Okay, that are lifestyle mistakes that stall fat loss and how to fix them. The four categories, once again, stressful modern life, overly stressful exercise patterns, poor sleeping habits, and finally, maybe most importantly, our food choices, especially our penchant to consume hyperpalatable modern foods. Thank you so much for listening. Let me know what you think. Let me know how things are working for you. podcast@bradventures.com. Would love to hear from you. And we really appreciate you spreading the word about the show. I've mentioned my cool podcast app that I use called Overcast, where you can, with a push of a button, create an audio excerpt of the show and text it to a friend who needs it, excuse me, deserves to listen to this audio clip. So try that out. And if you can take the time to leave a review, oh my gosh, that really helps the show rise up the rankings and get more attention and more listeners. So appreciate you being part of the scene here, and look forward to hearing from you via email is best, podcast@bradventures.com. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.